This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Doug Whaley brought to you by Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union. 4.75% on a seven-month CD with just $1,000 new money. Full details at AllegiantFCU.org. And Doug also brought to us by Tri-State Office Furniture, the best in the business. Good morning to you, Doug. How you doing, buddy?
Football tomorrow, and we got some football weather, AFC North type weather coming at you.
I just read that we are going to have snow stick here in Pittsburgh tomorrow night into Friday morning, and in Cleveland, it's like a degree or two from being either a sleet game or a snow game. Oh. And I think these Steelers are built for it, guys.
No.
Grand and Pan, 15 tight ends, right to your face, Myles Garrett. I do. I think Russ probably loves that.
Oh,
I think he's built. He's not the tallest guy. He doesn't have the strongest arm anymore, but I feel like he would love playing in those kind of elements.
Yeah, I can see pound, pound, pound over the top to Pickens. Pound, pound, pound over the top to Mike Williams. And then just get up and just smother him.
So we're going to go back into the vault a little bit. You think of games like this, right, where it could be rainy, it could be snowy. Do you really, as a scout or a GM, look into hand size for quarterbacks? I mean, I know Kenny Pickett going into the vault, small hands, that was an issue. How much do you really, really pay attention to a guy? Like, I think that Russell Wilson did have big hands whenever he did come out.
He
was a baseball player, so I don't know if you even looked in that. But, like, really, how much does that matter?
It only matters if it affects the way they play. So if he has small hands and he continually fumbles and can't hold onto the ball, then, yeah, all right, one of the reasons is the small hands. But if it never shows up in his game, you take it as a note, but no. It's all about production. A lot of people can get caught up in, especially because of the underwear Olympics that have been made to make the public think that that is the majority of why people get drafted or don't get drafted, or that's 90% of the evaluation process. No, it's a piece of the puzzle. Mm. And if something comes up, just like analytics, if something comes up that co-signs on what you think this player is, then you use it. If it's something that differentiates what you think, then you go back and check and say, did I miss something? But it's not the end-all, be-all. If a guy has small hands and he never fumbles, oh, well. Then there are exceptions to the rules. And that's another thing when you talk about an analytics. Give me an analytics that says 100% then I'm going to always go with it.
Sure.
But everybody's like, well, the analytics says 80% chance you're going to – well, there's a 20% chance sometimes that it's going to be wrong, right? And sometimes those variables that analytics don't take into consideration, like when I'd like to get PFF or any analytics person you see on the TVs, give me a numerical value on heart, on toughness, on mental toughness. Once you start doing that, then I'm going to be all in. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not poo-pooing analytics. I'm saying there's a difference between being analytically informed and analytically driven.
Oh, I always say that analytics are a tool, but if it's the only thing you use, then you are a tool. You have to use
that.
It. Thank you. I just actually made that up. I haven't said that before.
You're gonna have to.
I think I might keep that one around. Yeah. By the way, Russell Wilson, big hands.
Yep.
10.25-inch hands. The average hand size for quarterbacks in the NFL is 9.7 inches. The average male hand size is 7.4 inches. Guessing that's what Russ had on Future, but that's neither here nor there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
Did you think, and I think we know the answer to this, but like, you're building a team in Buffalo. You're building a team in the AFC North. You're absolutely building a team that can be mutters, are you not?
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. Just like if you got a dome team the other way.
Yeah, you got to play to not only your division, but your home. When we looked at quarterbacks, you had to be able to have an arm that could cut through the wind, because the wind in Bills Stadium was a factor, and it was a major factor. And if you had a cupcake arm, you're gonna have troubles. You won't be able to do anything. So, yes, there are different attributes that are more a focal point depending on where you play and the division you play in and where you play at home.
You mentioned heart, and there's not an analytic for that, although my doctors would argue with that because I've had multiple echocardiograms. Lamar Jackson, I think, is the primary case of this. Mm-hmm. I thought it was obvious he was not the same guy on Sunday. And we talked to Jason LaConfora, who hosts a radio show mm-hmm. in Baltimore on Tuesday. And, I mean, he said it looked like Lamar does in playoff games. You know, some guys meet the moment, some guys shrink from the moment. That's what it looked like with Lamar on Sunday to me, Doug.
And I'll also add the offensive coordinator. Because if you go back to the AFC Championship game, and even now, he seems to shrink
yep.
in those big moments.
Call.
And then that probably perpetuates to Lamar Jackson saying, oh, if he's putting me in these situations and we're doing something different, then I'm going to have to step outside of my comfort level and try to rise to that occasion to try to start throwing all the time instead of giving it to Derrick Henry. Didn't they say Derrick Henry had zero touches in the fourth quarter?
Zero.
And
not on the field in the two-point play either.
Right. And what was the biggest margin of variance there? They weren't down two scores at any time.
Nope.
Right? So that's the type of thing. So it's not only Lamar. I think it's a whole organizational thing that the Steelers have over the Ravens.
Do you think the Patriots had that over the Steelers?
I mean, the proof's in the pudding.
Yeah.
If you just look at the W's and L's, yeah. And it's sometimes you've played. There's just teams that just have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big pool player, and I used to have a friend that has passed along, Kevin McKeever, and we used to play pool all the time. I had it in my house, and I'd be mopping them up, but I had that on the eight ball. Every time I'd get to the eight ball, I'd either scratch or I'd miss, and then he'd come back in, and it's just one of those mental things that I just could never get over.
You do he it three left. Or four times, you're yeah. going to do it a sixth and seventh.
Then you're like, oh, I'm done.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, I got you.
How could a team like Cleveland, or to say a franchise like Cleveland, get over that? Like, I mean, it's been so many years, and so many coaches, so many quarterbacks. Look at the situation they're in right now. Deshaun Watson out for the season, but you're paying him so much money. You give up draft picks. You have Jameis Winston, like, and you're probably going to move on from your coach again.
Right.
Like, how can an organization get over that hump? And we've seen it. We've seen Buffalo do it. We've seen many organizations do it, but what do you think that main piece to that puzzle is to get over that hump?
The main piece to the puzzle, and I have intimate knowledge, is we had in Buffalo, we had a new owner, Terry Pegula, came in. And the first coaching search that we had, I asked him, I said, what do you want your organization to look like? And he goes, I don't know. So then we had a broad spectrum of candidates from two-time winning coach, Super Bowl coach, all the way to an up-and-coming OC and up-and-coming DC. So we had 12 candidates, so he could kind of get a feel for what's out there. So the next time when we hired Sean McDermott, I said, no, let's figure out where we are as an organization and where we need to go and what type of coach will get you there. So I'm saying this all to say, when you look at the most successful organizations in any sports and they're consistently competing, the mantra and the narrative and the overall arching premise of what this organization is about comes from ownership, and it's ownership down. And once you have that ownership saying, I want my franchise to look like this, if you make a mistake higher in the coach or the GM, you don't have to scrap everything. You can just hire someone else that fits that. If you let the coach or the GM set it, if you have a bad hire, then you have to scrap everybody and start over again.
Mm.
And that's why.
Real good hire by you, Doug. I mean, seriously, one of the more transformative culture swaps, really, in recent NFL history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
And the point was, we needed a CEO. We didn't need a good coach. We needed a CEO to come in and set the culture for the whole organization. We didn't need a defensive-minded coach. We didn't need an offensive-minded coach. We needed someone to say, this is what the Bills are about, and this is what we're going to do.
More
culture than anything else. And then now they hit on the quarterback, too. And that's the second step.
That
helps a lot, too. But, yeah, that's the difference. And when you look at the Haslams, look at what they did with Deshaun Watson. You see they're just throwing darts. They're just, hey, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we believe. We're going to go for it. Doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. They're wrong. That's why they're in their situation right now.
Now I know that we're going down a little rabbit hole right here, but mm-hmm. do you think that might be the issue with the Pittsburgh Penguins? I mean, the culture's definitely changed. I mean, you have a former Hall of Fame, one of the best hockey players ever to run your organization. Right. And then now you have somebody from the outside that comes in and sees, you know, dollar signs. And
that's it. Yeah, they're running it like a business. And just like the other sports team in this city, the Pittsburgh Pirates. If you were a stockholder in the Pirates and you took Pirates out and they made widgets, you'd be like, that's a hell of an owner. Because he keeps costs down. He makes sure we get a consistent return every year. And he's not going to go for throwing some money in on something that isn't going to definitely give us a return on the investment. But as your sports owner, that is not what you need. So, yes, when you have a company like Fenway Sports Group that have multiple teams and franchise and everything, they're just looking at the bottom line. Would they like to go on a run? Absolutely, because, yeah, that's going to bring in extra money. But the bottom line is, can you guarantee me we're going to go on a run if – we put in 2X. And in sports, you can't guarantee anything. So as a business owner, I'm like, well, if I can put in $100 million and always get 50 out, and you tell me to put in 200 and I might get 100 out, but there's a might in there, I'm all right. Because guess what? I got to answer to shareholders and everybody else, because when it goes bad, they're going to be like, where's my money?
For what it's worth, and Josh Rountree tweeted this out last night, actually, since FSG bought the Penguins, 124 wins, 130 losses. Mm-hmm. Coincidence? ? Question mark? All right, coming up next, back to the Stillers. Tomorrow is the anniversary of a monumental day in Pittsburgh Steelers history. At least I think. We'll get your guys' opinion on that when we come back. You can text us, brought to you by Eggersteiner & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. You have a question for Doug, you can tweet us as well, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. All right, we will get to the big anniversary in Pittsburgh Steelers history. It's actually a Steelers-Browns anniversary. It's a big one. It's a big one, and there's a big topic with it. But breaking news, Pro Football Hall of Fame has announced the 25 modern era player semifinalists and Hines Ward on the list. Yay for Hines. Here's the problem. Everybody's good.
Yeah. James Harrison also on that list.
Hey, good for James.
Everybody's good.
I think James's problem, we'll get to Hines. I think there's a deeper conversation with Hines. James's problem is that he didn't do it for a decade plus. When he was at his highest level, he was as good as anybody, and he has maybe the best play, at least arguably the best play in Super Bowl history, but he wasn't elite for a decade plus, and I think he gets bonus points knocked off for that.
I'll give you a comparison.
Yeah.
Terrell Davis.
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah. Short
because short and sweet, but he was at his peak, and then he had that memorable Super Bowl run. John Elway doesn't get that Super Bowl ring without Terrell
Davis.
No
doubt.
So that's where you can get that comparison. You know, so
I think, like, watching James at the height of his powers, Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if the longevity thing will be held against
Between him. Between him and Hines, though, the game changed because of them.
Yeah.
You're right about that.
And that I factor that in, and I know that you do too, Doug.
Absolutely. And another thing that helps with James Harrison, his story. Undrafted free agent, cut a couple times. So that story perpetuates maybe a Hall of Fame push, that if he was just like a third-round pick and then just had that short, sweet career – then people are like, eh. But coming from as a free agent getting cut, I remember this. Clark Hagans drops a weight on his foot, fractures his foot. That's when we signed James Harrison,
wow,
which had just been cut by Baltimore because they sent him over to World League in Europe, and he hated Europe. And he forced himself off the team in World League. And Baltimore, like, we sent you over there. You don't want to be on there. We're cutting you. So he was on the street. Get a call. Get him in, because we're going to lose him for 4 or 5 weeks. Clark Hagans doesn't drop a weight on his foot.
No, who James knows? Harrison.
He's not on this list.
Man.
He probably may have been, but you don't know.
You know, what's crazy about that is we talked earlier in the week about the most hated Ravens. James Harrison would have gone to the top of the list, right?
Oh, if he was a Raven?
Oh, if he was a Raven?
Oh, yeah.
If it would have worked out there? Oh, what, my God.
What if they had Tim and T. Sizzle bookends?
They're both on the list here. Yeah.
No doubt. Doran, I think your point's a really good one. I mean, blindside blocks, gone, because Keith Rivers' jaw broke. with James Harrison, the whole Muhammad Massaquoi thing, mm-hmm. you can't play defense the way you used to be able to play defense, and you can't play offense in it as physical of a way because of Hines Ward.
And it's a shame because I was watching that Houston game this last
Dallas.
Weekend. Yeah, Dallas. That's who it was. And Petrie had an unbelievable hit, and it was so violent that they immediately threw the flag. And upon review, it was a clean hit, shoulder to shoulder.
Yep.
But when you have such violent hits now, everybody just assumes it's a penalty. And they didn't even review it, and that's because of James Harrison and Hines.
So, I mean, you can make the argument that the game is worse because of those guys.
That too, yeah.
I mean, he really can.
Mm-hmm.
I liked football the way it was. And I have a lot of respect for guys who played in the league and guys who played football and what it does to the body. But as far as the viewer is concerned, it is not as good of a product, I don't think, with that element of violence being ripped from it.
Absolutely right.
And we can go down a rabbit hole because it's them, but I blame, not blame, it's the lawsuits from the old players. And if the owners would have been forthcoming with the information like they are now, then you know what you signed up for. Then everybody, we wouldn't be in the situation mm-hmm. we are now. Mm-hmm. So, but we won't go there because I don't want the oligarchs to come after me.
Here's the problem for Hines. Reggie Wayne. Here's another problem for Hines. Anquan Boldin. No, although those guys were cut from the same cloth. Mm-hmm. Steve Smith Sr., same kind of guy.
Yep.
He would go up and get it. The little guy in terms of height. Who else was on there at wide receiver? Torrey Holt. Is Hines better than those guys?
No. Not as a receiver.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this off the air. If you looked at, if there was a category for overall football player and impact on the game, Hines top of the list.
Yep.
As a receiver, no. Yeah. And he got me 2 rings. So I'm a big Hines fan.
That's Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah. We hired him in the XFL to be our head coach. I'm a huge Hines Ward fan. But when you take your glasses off of homerism and put in just straight football, he's not as good as a receiver as those guys. But again, as a football player, I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Well, and so here's always been my argument. Are you one of, if not the best in the game when you play? And I think Hines was right there on that line, but I don't think he was better than, let's say, Marvin Harrison. And then the further we go now into modern football, The statistical, gosh.
Like, how much better was Antonio Brown to Hines Ward?
Oh, I don't even think they were close.
Right. Now that's the discussion right there.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Like, Antonio Brown, like, he changed. Like, he was, you had to alter the way that you prepare for him, and he was going to still get his. Hines Ward, you not feared, but you were aware where Hines Ward was because he would lay those crushing blocks on you. And he was just a dog and just keep fighting. But, like, for him to go for, like, 7 for 150, he never would do that.
Yeah.
You feared him on third down.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You didn't fear him first and second down. Not whatsoever. Like, third down, okay. He's the Welker type, Danny Amendola type. Like, 3rd and 7, he's getting the rock and he's getting the first down.
And it's a shame, too, because I think if you pulled Steelers fans, especially the younger generation, all-time favorite Steelers, I think, you know, non-quarterback division, I think it's Troy, and I think Hines is right up there.
Right there.
Oh, my gosh. Did I ever tell you about the time that he thought I grabbed his ass?
No.
So, after what I saw on the break?
No, I dropped my pen. It just looked bad on the – and Doran walked by. It looked bad on the screen here.
I didn't see any pen under there.
I didn't see any. That was right up here. I just saw it. All right, anyway.
So I think they still do this, but the Steelers would go and they would play basketball games for charity against faculty, and Hines is inbounding a ball, and I was there with my sister, who was like 7 or 8 at the time, and I was walking her to the bathroom, and she reaches up, and I don't think she meant to, but she like kind of grabs his ass, and she keeps walking, and Hines turns around, I'm like, hey!
I like your sister. She probably did it on purpose at 7.
She may well have. And maybe grabs a little too.
She brushed it.
It wasn't quite Joey Porter Jr. grab, but there was a shorts tug kind of right on the backside.
He just looked at you.
He turned around and just eye to eye. Well, he looked down, but like I'm standing right there. Yeah. I would love to see Hines get it. Yeah. This is why they created the Hall of Honor. We talked about this not long ago. The great Steelers. they just seem like Steelers. Ben, not just a quarterback, but he was going to be limping and he was going to be bleeding and he's he's not the most attractive guy. He looks like Western PA and plays football like Western PA. Hines was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
He would just deplete you. And he'd catch balls in traffic, too.
And don't get it twisted. When you're in draft meetings, too, there is that, hey, does he fit what we're all about? And even in Buffalo, does he fit that Western PA, that Rust Belt image of you? And you have like a California quarterback. Is he going to thrive in Western PA? Is he going to thrive in Western New York? I'm not saying that's the driving force, but that goes into the equation.
I think you could take Western PA guys who are great and they could play anywhere. I don't know if you could take anybody and put him in Western PA.
No.
Like Drew Brees, do you think he
would? Nah. I don't know about Rivers either. Like, I don't know.
Brees
is a good one.
Yeah, Rivers, I think, because he had some...
He had moxie.
He had moxie. He had
big.
Dadgum.
And he had that fiery, like, hey, I ain't going to back down from anybody type stuff, even though he had that funky delivery.
He would have got murdered behind those early Steelers O-lines, though. He would have got crushed. Crushed.
I always tell this story. I saw him run off the field after we played him one game. He looked like a big old praying mantis. He was like running like this, and he was like, "Dadgummit, dadgummit!" I'll never forget. Like he looked like a 6'9" praying mantis. His hands. He was like running. I'm like, "Dang, look at that! That's wild looking." I thought he was an alien.
Yeah, he's trying to populate the world, so he might be an alien.
He got what
50,000 kids. I mean, jeez. But you can afford it, I guess. Well, he can.
Dadgummit. Fan Morning Show brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. We'll keep kicking around the Hall of Fame. We'll give you some more of the names on this list, including one that should not belong. It just absolutely should not belong, and I got a take on that. Plus, tomorrow is the anniversary of a really big Steelers-Browns game, a transformative Steelers-Browns game. We'll tell you about that when we come back. Text line's mad at us because we're saying that Hines is unlikely to wind up in the Hall of Fame, or at least in this class, have a tough time getting in. And a texter says, don't you guys know Hines has 1,000 receptions? Yeah, but...
What does Torrey Holt have?
Torrey Holt.
I mean, I'm sure it's more.
Well, Steve Smith Sr., who's also on the ballot, has more.
Yes.
Reggie Wayne, who's on the ballot, has more.
Yes.
Anquan Boldin, who's on the ballot, has more.
So I would assume that Torrey Holt, who played on... with
Greatest Kurt, Show on Turf.
Yes, has more. And he had Isaac Bruce on the other side.
I don't think he has more because I would have seen him on that list, but he has, excuse me while I look this up, he has more yards than Hines, that's for sure. Where's catches? 920. So, I mean, right there. But the other three, if get Torrey Holt out of it even for a second. I mean, the other three have more, and he's on the ballot with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a problem. Now, Adam Vinatieri's on this list. And I got a problem with that. If you're going to keep a guy like Hines out, like if you're putting Vinatieri and you're only doing so because of his postseason success, he is the 34th most accurate kicker in NFL history. 34th! Justin Tucker's a significantly better kicker, not on Sunday, than that guy. And if he had Tom Brady as his quarterback, I'm guessing his ass would be in the Hall of Fame. If you're putting that kind of importance on postseason success, then Hines would need to be in because he's a Super Bowl MVP with a lot of other counting stats. You know what I mean? Like, Vinatieri, regular season, I think he finished up with the most all time. I don't know. He might still be there, but he also had more kicks than anybody in NFL history. He was a volume guy. He was nowhere near as accurate as some of these kickers today. And if Hines has to fight that battle, he's not going to get the counting stats that other wide receivers today are going to get. Well, then why would I not hold Adam Vinatieri to a same standard? Because he made a couple of Super Bowl kicks? Okay, Hines has an MVP. That's all I'm saying. You got to be consistent. If one guy gets in based on the postseason, then the other guy with good counting stats should get in based on his postseason success.
I mean, I agree. I just don't think that they're going to put in multiples at a position. So, like, it is also, they want to be, you know, spread the love around, I guess. So
the Steeler bias.
Yeah, and that's we said that earlier.
Steeler bias. I mean, you have so many, there's like, oh, another Steeler. Ah, come on. Exactly. But, no, that's a good way to say it. And that's the best thing about the Hall of Fame for us because there's no consistent way to determine who's, and it gives us a lot to talk about. But that's also the most frustrating. If you're going to be this way and say Vinatieri just because of his clutch gene and not his overall ability to be accurate, but now this guy, Hines Ward, which was clutch and overall consistent, it's not, you're not giving me apples to oranges.
That's what, that's the biggest problem I have with any Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You can make an argument for just about any finalist that they deserve to be in, and you can make arguments that guys at the same positions, if they would take people out, should come out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's never consistent. Hines had 123 yards in Super Bowl 40, and he was the Super Bowl MVP. So to me, if you put Vinatieri in for making a 48-yard field goal, which that doesn't even sound impressive anymore, then I think Hines deserves
I'll give you
legit
consideration. I was at the Tuck game, so I was doing it in advance. And that was the year the Raiders were unreal.
So good. Gannon was the MVP.
Gannon, yeah. Charles Woodson, all those guys.
Charlie Garner, boom, 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 boom.
Man. Yep. So I come back, and I'll give it to, I learned a lot from Kevin Colbert. I came back from that game, and I had to trounce through snow after that game. It was miserable. But anyway, so I come back, and I just look at him like, man, I'm glad New England beat Oakland. I was real nervous about Oakland. And I remember to this day, Colbert looked up and said, they're all good teams when you get to this part of the season.
Yeah.
Be afraid of them all. And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
New England came in and beat us.
Special teams hurt a little bit in that one.
Yeah.
just a smidge.
Just a tad.
Perhaps a little cheating too, but that's neither here nor there. I'll give him credit for the tuck rule kick.
Yeah.
you probably couldn't even see.
No. It was, and I was in the, first of all, after they called it a tuck rule, all the Raiders execs and their team was right next to me. And everybody's been, well, not everybody, but in the press box, there's a rule. No cheering in the press box. That thing just erupted. I heard so many F-bombs and everything. I thought they were going to bring in the Boston police just to take them.
Oh, man.
They were livid. It was one of my, I've had a lot of moments in professional sports, but that was one of the most interesting ones.
That Raiders team was really good.
Yeah. Really good.
Was Jerry Rice on that team?
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Tim Brown?
And Tim Brown.
Oh, yeah.
They were loaded, dude. Bill Romanowski? I mean, they're doing dance with
some. I'll tell you what they weren't. What they weren't, though, was young.
No. And that's why they were so pissed. They're like, this is our shot.
This is it.
This is it.
And really, when you think about the franchise, that was it.
Absolutely.
Woo! All right. I keep saying that this is... tomorrow's a huge anniversary for the Steelers and for the Browns.
We've been going off on rabbit holes. That's my bad.
But no, these are good. I think people like what we've been talking about more than what I'm about to talk about. But what I'm about to talk about, I think, is big. And I want to know how big. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Pony is arguing with me via text through Doug, talking about how Adam Vinatieri has more points than anybody in NFL history.
Yeah, I do disagree with you.
Listen, man, if you're going to kick for 40 years and kick the ball more than anybody else, you should have the most points.
Well, then you should get in. I mean, you did have two different teams.
Well, he's an 84% kicker. But if he were doing that today, his ass would get cut! Cut!
He wouldn't be like that today.
But no, that...
I don't know.
When I saw his name on, I was like, yeah. But when you break it down and when you say he's the 34th rated kicker in terms of accuracy, that puts a little light on it.
Well, do it in the playoffs then. What is he ranked? One?
He has the most points in playoff history, but...
There you go.
Okay, his quarterback's Tom Brady, for God's sakes. Like, if Chris Boswell had Brady, guess what? He's a first ballot Hall of Fame guy then. Justin Tucker, Brady, first ballot Hall of Fame. I don't want to get bogged down with this, but you ride the coattails of Brady, and he made a big hit.
So did Hines ride the coattails of Ben?
No, he had to deal with Maddox and Cordell and all that junk.
Exactly.
See, people have argued that in the text line, too. Well, Hines Ward was on a run-based team. I'm sorry, I can't give him credit for what he didn't do, though. Mm-hmm. Like, if he were in a high-flying passing attack, he wasn't. That's just the way it went.
And his skill set didn't lend himself to be on the greatest show on turf. He would have been that third guy
on
the greatest show on turf. His skill set fit where he was as a Pittsburgh Steeler.
So I'd like Vinatieri's as a Patriot.
Look, and I don't want to take anything away from Vinatieri. You have to make the kicks. I mean, Norwood didn't make a kick for Buffalo. He's remembered forever. You do got to make the kicks.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to do is say, if the era stuff doesn't matter, and when guys are far and away better kickers now than Vinatieri was back then in terms of percentage, then we can't do the numbers thing against Hines. Like, well, they throw the ball around a lot more. I mean, a thousand catches is not going to age well. Okay, well, Vinatieri didn't age well. Both guys had a ton of postseason success. That's all I'm trying to say. Now Pony's texting me. After I tried to defend him earlier today against Ken Carmen, maybe I got to be on Team Carmen now.
Yeah, but I don't think Hines' numbers aged well during his time compared to his counterparts. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, Vinatieri, the longer the game is played, he ain't going to be 34th. Like, he's going to be 50th. Then he's going to be 75th. Then he's going to be 100. And the same thing's going to happen to Hines, but that's always the argument against Hines. And I'm just saying, if you're going to make that argument against Hines, you got to make it against Vinatieri, too.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Are we fighting?
No.
Are we on Carmen's side now, though?
I told you. You're not dragging me into this. You're on your own.
Texter. Then Bettis shouldn't be in as a compiler.
And so did Filippone just said it. And I said, that's the point you guys are making. It's the lack of consistency on what determines a Hall of Famer.
I agree with Ben. Bettis. I mean, 3.9 yards per carry. Now, the argument against the compiler argument is, well, there's a reason why Vinatieri was in the league for so long.
Yes.
And Frank Gore. Mm-hmm. And Jerome Bettis. You don't get a chance to be a compiler if you're not good.
Right.
All right, real quick now. We put it off to the last possible second. Tomorrow, the one-year anniversary of Matt Canada's firing, which, depending on how this year goes, could be one of the most important dates in Steelers history. Yeah. Seriously.
And this is, I will toot my own horn on this, which I don't do often. The first day I came on the show, when you guys weren't here, though, I said, give me one reason why everybody's so excited about Matt Canada. Oh, he needs a running quarterback. I said, well, tell me one running quarterback he had coming up. When he was at Pitt, there was no running quarterback. LSU, no running quarterback. Maryland. Oh, well, him and Ben don't get along. Well, he was Ben's quarterback coach. If he didn't get along, why would he take the offensive job? So, and everybody was just giving him the benefit out. I said from there, if you look at his resume, he was not qualified. He had one good year at Pitt. And don't get me wrong, I love that he had a great year at Pitt with Nathan Peterman. And Peterman was not athletic.
No.
So everybody was hoping and praying, but I told him, and that's why I was ready to fire him from day one.
You were one of the few, because I think it's hard to remember, but my recollection is most people really excited about Canada because they had it with Feetner.
Right. And he had, and it's the Pitt love. I mean, Pittsburgh love.
Yeah.
He had such a great year when he was at Pitt. Everybody's going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But you got to study the guy's resume.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a massive day in Steelers history because not only does Canada get let go at 6-4, and then Tomlin says you have to engineer victory more fluidly or whatever it was he said back then. And I think it led to the dominoes of Kenny Pickett getting ousted and Russell Wilson getting here. And now they're sitting at 8-2, and I think they got a chance to win a Super Bowl.
And they had never done something like that
before.
Yeah, that is a pivotal moment. And it happened whenever we were on air, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. May have gotten a little blowback from being excited about a guy getting fired, but hey, people will be celebrating one day whenever I get let go. That's just the industry.
Yep.
And maybe it's today, after arguing that Adam Vinatieri does not belong in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
But I will say, running back, like you said, like Frank Gore and the bus, to play that position for that long, you can do 3.9 and still be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Sorry, Pony.
If the last game of Bettis' career is the 05 divisional game where he fumbled the football, and let's say the Steelers don't win it, does he get in?
Not yet.
I'm with you.
He's
maybe at some point.
That legacy, or what's that one for the older guys that get in?
Oh, yeah, where they do the legacy thing.
Yeah, right, yeah, he might be in one of those. I don't know.
Like Power.
Right. Yes. Maybe that's what happens with Hines one day. We'll see. All right, good show. Spirited show today.
Mm-hmm.
I took you guys down some rabbit.
No, it was great. It was one of my favorite Whaley hours of all time. We're going to hand things over to Joe Starkey and, I believe, Bob Pompiani. Coming up next, we'll talk to you in tomorrow, previewing Steelers-Browns at 5:40. First, though, fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. It's here. Chevy Red Tag event now through December 2nd. 0% APR for well-qualified buyers. Full terms at sunchevy.com. Today, high is 64.